Item 6, presentation of classification and total comp reports. Christina.
Thanks. So on April 12th, the board approved the memorandum of understanding between Zazera and AFSCME, Local 2700, for the period of January 1st, 2017 through December 31st, 2018. As a part of that agreement, both Zazera and AFSCME agreed to do a classification compensation study. The union was provided an opportunity to do their own study as well, so we'd have two studies to get presented today. This is a presentation item. This is part of the meet and confer process, so there's no action that will be taken. We'll start with having Katie from Coffin Associates come up and present the presentation.
Good morning, members of the board. Thank you for having me here today. I am here to provide to you the process and methodology and findings and results of the classification and total compensation study for the represented employees at Zazera. And as you recall, I was here a couple of years ago. We actually began the study at that point in time in 2015 when the agency was moving forward on an agency-wide classification and compensation study. And we had presented to you our findings and recommendations on the unrepresented classifications. But for various reasons, the represented group was not in a position to move forward on the recommendations. And so we were hired back by the agency about the beginning of the year to continue that process. So I'm going to walk you through kind of what happened in 2015 and then what we did presently to finish out this study. In 2015, we conducted orientations with employees and gave them questionnaires to complete to capture the body of work that they were performing individually. They had an opportunity to do that as a group, if there were a number of them performing similar work, or as individuals. We received those questionnaires and reviewed them, and we conducted interviews with employees to clarify information and questions that we had about the information they presented and to allow them to provide context and nuance about their work that's often difficult to put in writing. And we conducted those meetings in 2015 and then developed draft reports or class descriptions, which captured the different work being performed. And then when we were hired back, we worked with those descriptions. We gave them back to employees, and we said, look at the descriptions and let us know if there's been any changes to your work in the last 2 years. And we received some comments, and we incorporated them in putting together class descriptions that incorporated best practices for descriptions. What we found as we looked at the work is almost all of the classifications we updated and just made sure they were current. We changed the titles because when we received the descriptions, they were actually part of a countywide system. And to distinguish the work being done in retirement services, the word retirement was placed in their title on all of the descriptions. So that didn't seem necessary now that the association had separated from the county. So we removed the word retirement, and for the most part, the class descriptions were titled to reflect the body of work. There were three series that existed at the time of the study, an accounting specialist 1, 2, 3, and there were two positions in that series, both at the 3 level. And we had a chance to look at the work there and understood that, the reconciliations and the complex work that they were doing, ensuring that there was appropriate accounting of the investments accounts and all the different retirement accounts. And however, it was very difficult to see that there were 3 levels of work involved in that particular series. It is somewhat common to find an entry in a journey because of the complexity and the difficulty in that work. There is certainly a basis of experience that would be important in order to move into that. And we found that basis of experience already occurred or existed in the accounting technician classification. So we made sure the accounting technician was current, and then created a one-level accounting specialist, which described the work that was being performed. There was also a three-level series of retirement counselors, and the retirement counselors comprised of an entry journey, one and two, and then a third level, which was intended to be a lead or the most advanced work. The description was exactly the same, except for the minimum qualifications, which were interesting because the one and two level had required a bachelor's degree, which was somewhat based on the work prohibited advancement within the organization. And the third level did not require a bachelor's degree, but experience as a two, which is kind of a unique situation. So what we found is, really looking at the work and the complexity, that there was a need for an entry journey, and we created a retirement counselor and a senior retirement counselor. We found that there was really a third level of complexity, and that related to disability cases, that there was a certain element of that work that got to be quite complex, and that you definitely had to be the most experienced or skilled in that area of work to be able to be successful. So we created another classification, kind of splitting out that specialization, and called it a disability specialist. So there were three levels within that class series. So those were the major changes in the class study. What we do at that point is we use that current description, the current descriptions, and we go out to the market, and we're going to survey for as part of the compensation study to find out what other agencies are paying for that body of work. Before we can begin the compensation survey, we need to determine the comparators, we need to determine the benchmarks, and we need to determine, make sure that there's agreement about the information that we're collecting. The comparator agencies in the 2015 study, we went through a great deal of analysis at that point in time. And part of that analysis is to find a comparator group that's going to be representative of all the work being done within the organization. As you pick and choose different comparators for different segments of work, you kind of lose the consistency of a solid group, because each organization comes with its own philosophy. And so it tends to skew the data as you mix agencies. But what we did want to recognize, and the way we usually approach choosing those comparator agencies, is to find a group of public agencies that provide the same services that you do. And that way we can ensure that the matches that within each of these agencies are doing the most similar type of work that you can find. And fortunately, within the state of California, there are several retirement agencies, and we look at factors such as, you know, number of employees, funding, number of participants in the plan, assets managed. All of those factors are kind of weighed out. We receive that data, and we rated and ranked each of those criteria to find agencies that were most similar to CSERA. So we chose... typically, we survey 10 to 12 agencies. We chose eight retirement agencies throughout the state of California. But we do recognize that the Bay Area is probably the highest labor market in the state, and that there are regional pay differences between the Bay Area and where some of these other retirement agencies were located. So we actually had five retirement agencies that were outside of the Greater Bay Area. We had one in Sacramento and several in Southern California. What we can do is we subscribe to a database called the Economic Research Institute. And that gathers nationally compensation practices throughout the country. And it breaks down in the state of California regional differences. And what we look at in this case is the cost of labor, which is really focusing on what employers pay, rather than cost of living, which focuses on the different prices of consumer goods and is very heavily influenced by housing market. So we adjusted all of the five agencies that were outside of the Bay Area by this cost of labor factor, and so that's detailed. Again, you can see on the data spreadsheets those adjustments that were made. And that gives us a better apples-to-apples comparison of the Bay Area salaries and you know, and those agencies that are outside of the Bay Area, bringing them to a better threshold. We went ahead and then moved forward on trying to find some sort of representation of your local market, because that was an important factor that the agency wanted us to consider as well. So out of the 12 agencies, there are four agencies that one of them actually has some retirement services internally, and three other agencies that were intended to provide us some sort of gauge of pay practices within this particular region. So that's how I think it was Contra Costa County, Contra Costa Sanitary District, East Bay MUD was chosen. So then once we had the comparator agencies chosen, and that was the process that we went through in 2015, so we continued to move forward in 2017 using that same group of comparator agencies. We looked at the number of classifications, and we chose five benchmarks. Again, those were chosen back in 2015, but they were still representative of the different functions that were being performed here in the agency. So we go out and collect data on these agencies. We create a straw person so that we get an even better apples-to-apples comparison. So we look at an employee plus family, and we're going to look at making sure that when we go in to collect data, now that PEPRA's in place, we have all these different tiers. And we're going to choose the classic tier because that's where we find most differences occur between the different agencies out there. So classic tier, employee plus family, and a five-year employee is what we're going to be looking at as far as the benefit level. So that'll influence vacations and some of the other factors that are based on time. We go into each agency. We had conversations with their human resources department, sometimes with the retirement agencies. We look at budgets. We look at allocations. We look at salary schedules and MOUs. And from all of that, what we capture is the top monthly salary for the matches. We're looking at class description to class description. So we really don't go by titles. We don't find those to be consistent throughout the state. We make sure that the body is at least 70% similar. And again, going into other retirement agencies, we're really able to look at, you know, and feel comfortable that the work being performed is going to be right in line with what you're doing here. We look at minimum qualifications, any kind of certifications or educational requirements. We are going to pick up for the classic tier, the retirement contribution that the agency makes. We capture any sort of statewide average cost for enhancements related to those retirements. We pick up basically any benefits that an employee would receive just based on employment, so no other conditions attached. We look at the health, dental, vision, life, long-time, short-term disability paid to an employee plus family. We look at five-year vacation leave, holiday leave, and any sort of administrative or personal leave that would be paid to that classification.
So one quick question. Mm-hmm. So you did that piece after 5 years. So the person would be employed for 5 years.
Correct.
And so what they get at 5 years was the figure you used.
Exactly.
Not what they get at higher date or 2 years or 10 years.
Right.
Just 5 years.
Exactly.
And you did that through all classifications.
Consistently throughout, yes.
Thank you.
So we want to take the same approach with every single classification and, again, you know, try to have an apples-to-apples comparison straight across the board. So that data, we then provided the district three different spreadsheets, one that summarizes the top monthly salary data, so just the base pay. We pick up the top step because that's the most consistent point in the salary range. There are many agencies who, you know, maybe they haven't adjusted their ranges for a while and that they don't end up really using that minimum step. So we want to find, you know, the maximum that each agency would be able to pay, and then we can build our salary ranges and recommendations down from there in a consistent manner. We provided that summary of the top monthly pay. We gave you all of the agencies, the match that we found within each of those agencies that best represented the body of work being performed here, the maximum salary, the effective date of that salary. If there were any negotiated increases, we provided that date as well as the percentage if that was known. So we tried to give you as much information to help in your decision making as possible. We then detail out the benefits, and we give you a side-by-side comparison of the different costs of the benefits that I described, related to retirement, related to health, related to leave. And then sometimes there is a benefit that a classification may receive, like auto allowance or cell phone allowance. This seems to be more common. And then we would reflect that if that classification happened to receive it. In this particular study with the represented group, we didn't find those sorts of benefits. So then what we found in the results is the third spreadsheet is going to be the total comp spreadsheet, which is basically base salary plus your benefits and then your total compensation. And we compare base salary to total compensation to determine what is the best point to use or the best number to use for future recommendations. When we looked at your base salary out of the five benchmarks, there were two classifications that were under market, paid under market, but within 5% of the market. And typically we say if you're within plus or minus 5% of the market, you're fairly competitive. We know that the matches are not going to be 100% to your body of work, and so there's a little bit of a give and take there with the plus or minus 5%. Most agencies choose to adopt their own philosophy relative to that and target the median. But again, that's, you know, an individual agency's decision. But what we're going to be looking at is the market median. We choose the median because it's not heavily influenced by very, very high paying agencies or very, very low paying agencies. What we're interested in is where's the cluster of pay? Where do most agencies pay for this body of work? So we look at, when we looked at the top monthly, we found two were under market, two were above market within 5%, and one was above market by more than 5%. When we looked at total compensation, we found that the benefits did positively influence and put you in a more competitive position, so that all of the classifications were over market. Two of them within 5%, two of them within 5 and 10%, one of them was over 10%. So based on that, we would make our recommendation on total compensation, because looking at your entire package, it puts you in a competitive position. If your benefits did not put you in a competitive position, then we would say, let's break these apart, focus on base salary and where each of your individual classifications fall relative to base, and then negotiate benefits separately. So our recommendations, what we basically do is we look at your salary schedule and we go forward. We take the percentage difference in total compensation from CSERA and the market, and we apply that to the base salary, and that becomes your new market position number. And we take that market position number and place it in the new salary schedule or the salary schedule in the range that market placement number falls closest to. So we went through that process on the benchmarks. And then for those classifications that we didn't benchmark, we internally line pay based on common market differential principles. So when we're looking at entry journey positions, there's usually a 10 to 15% difference between an entry level and a journey level. And so we would look at internally aligning and going through that process. And then from there, we presented the draft narrative report and our findings, and I am happy to answer any questions that you might have about this process.
So I have a couple questions. In terms of when you're doing the total comp under benefits, you have a formula here for the different formulas that are out there. And my question is, when you look at the retirement contribution assigned to an employee, are you looking at the full number that's in the valuation, which would include UAL, or are you only looking at the normal costs?
So we're actually using CalPERS has developed a statewide average actuarial number, and we use the midpoint of that average range. Because, as you know, the actual contributions that any agency might be making is influenced by age of population and funding and factors that are kind of outside of a, of control of the benefits and don't really reflect the relative value of that benefit to employees. So we use that average statewide cost.
Okay, that's good. And then you talk about some of them contributing to deferred compensation, and you include that in here. But I don't see any mention of Social Security. So if an agency contributes to Social Security, do you capture that?
Yeah, not every agency participates in Social Security. And I guess I should have stated, what we're representing is the cost to the employer these benefits on behalf of the employee.
I'm looking at the employer side.
So if an agency did participate in Social Security, we would certainly reflect the percentage that the employer would be contributing, because it's not universal. Not everybody participates.
Okay. So in your last line, the combination of employee retirement insurance contributions and deferred comp, that Social Security would get lumped in there?
It would, if that existed. And so I think when we looked at the single highest year in the deferred comp contribution was not the norm within that group of comparator agencies.
Thank you.
Todd, I have a follow-up question to yours. So, Katie, thank you very much for the report. Mm-hmm. To the question on the UAAL, are you looking at Cicera's employer contribution and excluding the UAAL as a comparison to that CalPERS average?
So what we're doing is we're looking at the formula that and the enhancement package that agency is offering to that group of employees, and we apply that statewide average cost percentage based on the formula.
Including to when the Cicera benefits as a total comp?
To every agency that number would be applied. So we don't really look at each agency's contribution or their actual normal cost, or we look at the statewide average and apply it to the formula. So across the state, there's a percentage cost range. Mm-hmm. For that particular enhancement. Mm-hmm. And we use the median of that range and apply. So everybody who has 2% of, 60 or 57.5 or whatever, that there would be some sort of cost for enhancement, we apply that same formula to each agency that has that particular one. Mm-hmm. It isn't dependent on what they're paying.
Yeah, I get it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But Todd, what I'm trying to ask is the Cicera UAL extracted from that? You know what I mean? Was that your original kind of
Yeah, comment? My original comment was based on, we have agencies here that have, 2% at 55 with 3% COLA. One could have a 32% total,
right.
Total rate. Others, 52%.
Exactly.
But what I hear her saying is, she doesn't even look at that.
Right.
If you have 2% at 55, you get this number plugged in.
And we know there's a baseline that every employer is paying, but then there's additional costs related to just the enhanced benefits. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're picking up.
I see. Okay.
So we don't even focus on everybody's paying a baseline as an employer.
Gotcha.
And then, of course, depending on funding and the age of your workforce, you may be paying additional percentages related to that, which we don't focus on either.
Normal cost? We're talking about?
It is not, because normal cost is agency dependent. Agency dependent. We're focusing on statewide averages.
I understand.
For
it's a statewide average, not a
for
normal,
normal cost.
That's where I'm going.
Excuse me. No, it's not. It's for the enhancements. So they've actually broken it down based on, with 2% at 55 as the baseline at that point in time, what is the average cost for any enhancements above and beyond that? That's what we're capturing. So single highest year is a perfect example. What is the average cost for that enhancement over the three-year average? And that's what we pick up.
So they look at how much does it cost to fund that benefit? Mm-hmm. And they take an average of it across the state.
And that average
for... So it's not UAL, it's not normal
right.
cost.
Right.
Okay, that's I'm just having trouble pinning down what it is. Now, for example, CalPERS is at 7.5%. That's their discount rate. We're at 7%. That means that the normal cost calculated under our actuarial valuation would be a higher normal cost. than it would be for CalPERS. Does any of that come into play?
It's really focusing on the enhancements. And then if the employee, so what we're picking up is what the employer is paying on behalf of the employee. So what we were often picking up before a lot of, the recession, is many employers were picking up part of the employee's portion, so we would reflect that. In some cases, they had single highest year, and there's a specific average cost associated with that enhancement because not everybody receives that, and you have to pay extra to receive that benefit. So we pick up the average cost of that. If you're in a formula that's an enhanced formula, we're going to focus on what the average cost of that enhancement is, and that's what we're showing. And then, of course, if you did participate in Social Security or you funded any other deferred compensation program. Is that
okay? Everybody else is clear, right?
I'm not. I mean, I am clear what you're doing, but in terms of the CICERA employees, when we're looking at each compensation or each classification or job, are we excising out the employer's UAAL cost that is shown against the employee? Because it's per, like, there's an, so on the paycheck, on the pay stub,
right,
there's an employee's share,
mm-hmm,
which should be normal cost.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the employer side, there's a normal cost for the employee, plus there's a UAAL, which in my agency is significant.
Right.
And it's just tagged actuarially and from an accounting method to the employee on a percentage of payroll, but it's not really the cost. It shouldn't be considered the total compensation for the employee.
Right. And that's why we use this, the statewide average.
So
right?
Then are you excising out?
Right. Because that baseline normal cost that you're referring to, everybody's paying it. So we don't.
Right. Okay.
That's your portion. So we don't reflect that. What we're trying to capture is the differences in retirement benefits from agency to agency.
Okay. So you're, for when we're looking at a total compensation for a CICERA employee, we're excising out the employer's UAAL.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Now I'm good.
Good.
And it sounds like the base normal cost as well, and then you're picking up
right,
only that amount that's in excess of the base normal cost.
That's based on the enhancements,
right.
Correct. I mean, it's a net because everybody would be paying the normal cost.
Thank you. Sorry for spending
minutes
on my question.
I'm glad to help clarify.
So building off of this average for retirement, when it comes to health, do you look at actual costs or do you say they offer Kaiser and this HMO so they get this dollar amount?
So we're going to pick up the maximum that the agency would pay on behalf of the employee. The employer would pay on behalf of the employee. So if they have an array of plans, uh-huh, and again, it has to be commonly used. Every once in a while, we run into an agency who has an employee who lives very remotely, yeah, and it's a very high cost plan.
Right.
But it would be a commonly used plan and the highest cost plan for an employee plus family. So what is the employer's contribution for that benefit?
So if in your study you use a comparative agency that negotiates on their own and doesn't get as good a deal as, say, CalPERS Medical, that employee is kind of penalized, or that that position is somewhat overstated in that, you know, people with CalPERS Medical, they have Kaiser available and then they have an assortment,
right,
of HMOs,
mm-hmm,
whereas if a single agency goes and negotiates their Kaiser and their health net, and their health net is super high because there are only, you know, 300 employees,
right,
and retirees,
right,
they're, it's going to get overinflated in here and raise the average. Is that correct?
Well, the scope of work, we didn't delve into that. So it just doesn't, we try to pick a baseline and so no, we do not evaluate the how rich each benefit is.
Okay.
Relatively.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from board members? Okay. Thank you. Okay, Christina. Thank you, Katie.
Okay, sure, absolutely.
2700 to present their report.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm glad to meet you. It's awkward meeting you under this circumstance. I would have preferred we'd met earlier. I'm relatively new to Sisera. I represent the represented employees here, and I work for AFSCME Local 2700. So let me go through the presentation. Let's start here. In June of 2015, and some of this will be a little redundant, but we wanted to cover kind of the linear progression of how things developed. In June of 2015, Coffin Associates was contracted to perform a total compensation study for all of Sisera's non-represented employees, including leadership staff. 12 comparators were chosen for the non-rep study. 8 of the comparator agencies were located in Northern California, and 4 of the comparator agencies were located in Southern California. Using statewide comparators makes a great deal of sense for Sisera's leadership positions because recruitment for the non-represented positions extends well beyond the local labor market. Examples of this are that Gail, and I believe, is your last name pronounced Stroll?
Yes.
Okay. Previously worked in Phoenix, Arizona. Tim
Hoppy.
Previously worked in Folsom, California. Here's a list, and I think you're well familiar with this, of the comparator agencies that COFF used. In AFSCME's study, we used the same comparator agencies with the exception of we did not use Southern California. And so we cut Southern California out, and I'll talk about why we did that. In 2017, and actually this should say earlier than June, I do believe that COFF started working on this probably around January. Sisera again contracted with Coffin Associates to perform a total compensation study for all represented staff. They used the same 12 comparators for the represented study that had been used for the non-rep study. The external labor market for represented staff is not statewide. We don't use recruiters to hire people into our bargaining unit. We don't have people leave our bargaining unit and go to work in Southern California. We believe that COFF should not have used the Southern California comparators for the represented study. Using the same comparators for both groups is a critical error that skews the data. I had heard at some point that the employer believed that it was necessary to use the Southern California comparators because they wanted to compare themselves with similarly sized other retirement agencies. That makes sense also for the management unit, because if you're a manager, there's a big difference between being a manager of 2 employees versus being a manager of 200 employees. And so when you're a manager, size does matter. When you're a technical employee, the job's the same, whether you're working for a company of 2 people or 200 people. And your own consultant points that out in the non-rep study, that size is not particularly important for non-reps. And so we again think that that goes to eliminating the Southern California comparators. For the 2017 study, COFF benchmarked 5 classifications. 4 are represented, 1 is non-represented. And so the 4 classifications that were benchmarked is the accounting technician, and we used the current titles, by the way. The executive assistant, which is non-represented, member services specialist is represented, as is the retirement services technician, and the senior retirement counselor, which is currently titled retirement counselor 2. AFSCME benchmarked 8 classifications for our study. 7 are represented, 1 is non-represented. We added the additional classifications for the reasons below. We certainly wanted to look at the positions that COFF benchmarked, but we also wanted to look at the retirement administrative assistant. COFF's internal alignment does not reflect the market for this position, and so the wage that they are suggesting should be paid is dramatically below the market, and it's actually about 20% below market of what other employers in Northern California and the Bay Area are paying for that position. The Retirement Council at 3. COF proposes eliminating this classification, and that does not reflect the market for this series in the Bay Area. Most other Bay Area retirement organizations, and we've got a chart on this later, have a three-step series. And there's a way to address the problem. Well, I'll wait till we get there. The Retirement Accounting Specialist 3, COF's alignment doesn't reflect the market for this position. Employees and employers have a shared interest in doing class and comp studies. What's been done at CICERA, I've been a union representative for 34 years. I've worked all over the country, and I've worked for most major unions in this country, and so I'm well familiar with class and comp. I have never in 34 years seen a class and comp study that was done like this one. Always in my experience, the employer and the union sit down together and figure out what the benchmark classes will be. We also jointly figure out what the comparators will be. COF's own RFP talks about developing a project study team, which includes union representation. To exclude the employees and the union from this process, I don't even have words for how little sense that makes. It sets us on a collision path that really was quite unnecessary. Not only are we usually engaged at the point where we're picking comparators and where we're picking benchmarks throughout the study, there are meetings with the consultant, meetings with the employer, so that you kind of iron out bumps in the road. None of that has happened at CICERA. There has not been a single meeting. The first time I came to CICERA, I told the employer that I was very concerned about the comparators that are being used. And I was very curtly told that that had been decided in 2015. And the individual walked away from the conversation. This is first meeting where normally it looks like, hi, it's nice to meet you. I hope that we can work together. You know, I look forward to working with the agency to make sure, et cetera. And that's been a repeated pattern of behavior throughout this. Every time there's been an attempt to initiate a conversation about this, the answer has been no, we are not interested. Wages and benefits that are competitive allow employers to recruit and retain qualified staff. That's generally the primary purpose of a compensation study, is to make sure that you can recruit and that you can retain. Employees that perceive their compensation as fair are less likely to become dissatisfied and seek other employment. Developing an equitable compensation plan is beneficial both to the employer and to the employees, and that's why usually it's considered a joint collaborative process. In other studies, COF has strongly advised that employee representatives should be included in decision-making regarding choosing comparators. This is a quote from a 2016 RFP they submitted to the Eastern Municipal Water District. After seeing this, I requested a copy of COF's response to your own RFP, and this is reflective of what they said to the agency also. And in this case, they said, the selection of comparator agencies is considered a critical step in the study process. Our recommended methodology is that we involve the Board of Directors, Management, Human Resources, and Employee Representation, which would be the union, in the decision-making process of selecting which comparable agencies are included. And this is their own bolding in large letters prior to beginning the study. Our experience has shown that this is the most successful approach. If you look at COF's response to your own RFP, they say the exact same thing there. And they actually say that they generally have 100% implementation rate, and part of it is because they do it collaboratively. They talk about developing a study design team or a study project team, and it includes human resources, it includes management, it includes key employees, and it also includes the union. COF's September 25th final report asserts that represented employee total compensation is 5.5% above the market. In fact, total compensation for represented employees is below the market. If COF had used the appropriate comparators in the external labor market, where CICERA is currently recruiting employees and losing employees too, they would have reached the same conclusion. Employers have a variety of options regarding compensating employees relative to the external labor market. Some employers choose to lead the market. I formerly worked with BART, and they chose to consistently lead the market across all classifications. Some employers, and this is the most common approach, choose to match the market. And so when, I believe your name's Katie?
Yes.
When Katie talked about being within a 5% margin of error above or below, that's not only typical for COFS recommendations, that's typical across the board. Most employers do not adjust salaries within that 5% margin of error, either down or up. In other places where we work, if an employee is less than 5% below market, I've never seen an employer adjust that. I was rather surprised to see in the non-repped area there were employees that were above market by as little as 0.8% that were Y-rated downward. You know, the snapshot that's taken, I think there are some things that we would agree about. The snapshot that's taken in a class and comp study is not, it's a snapshot from that moment in time. As other employers give raises at different times, those numbers change, and that's part of why we have that 5% margin of error. We would agree that matching the market makes sense. The other option that employers have, and some employers choose this, is to lag the market. Most employers end up leading, matching, and lagging at different times of the year, depending on when other similarly situated employers get or give raises. Employers that lead the market provide higher wages and benefits than other employers in the external labor market. This compensation strategy can decrease employee turnover. Frequently, it's used because employers want to increase the supply of candidates when vacancies occur, and it can increase employee morale and productivity. Employers that choose to match the market provide compensation rates equal to competing employers to ensure that they remain competitive and can recruit and retain qualified candidates. Employers that choose to lag the market pay less than their competitors and generally have higher turnover rates, poor employee performance, and lower employee satisfaction rates. And I think I've already talked about this. I think the only thing, most of this I've discussed, but we agree that COFS has recommended that you match the market. We think that strategy makes sense for Sisera. We don't think it's necessary to lead the market. We also think it's problematic for you guys to lag the market. Different occupational groups have different labor markets, and before I deal with the slide, I'd ask you to think for a minute. If we were in charge of doing a class and comp study at, let's say, Harvard University, and let's say that we were going to look at two very different positions, if we were doing a class and comp study for the Chancellor of Harvard, our labor market for our class and comp study would be nationally, because we want to be able to recruit and retain qualified candidates from across the country. It's how we would recruit, it's how we would do our class and comp study, and so we would certainly look at national comparators. We would look at, you know, some of the UC series, we would also look at Princeton and Yale and other Ivy League institutions. If we were also at Harvard and we were doing a class and comp study for the janitor, we would never look at national comparators, because we would never hire janitors nationally. We would not use state comparators, and we would not use local comparators or regional comparators. We would use the city or the surrounding cities where Harvard is located. That's the same thing that should have been done here. It makes perfect sense to use your statewide comparators for management, because you are recruiting from a much broader pool. But in the case of our employees, that's not true. A valid compensation study must identify the correct labor market of the occupational group being studied. Different occupational groups have very different labor markets. It's inappropriate for a consultant or an employer to use a one-size-fits-all approach regarding comparators when studying different occupations with different external labor markets. Because we've just met and we don't know each other, I was feeling a little insecure that you might not believe me about this. And so I looked for some outside verification that I thought would be compelling. And in the report that we gave you, there are links to these as well. There are URLs so you can check it out. The Labor Market Analysis Department at UC Davis Human Resources defines the labor market as the area within which employers compete for labor. We think that's the appropriate definition. It's not just UC Davis. Numerous arbitrators that handle arbitration cases over these kinds of issues agree that you should match where you are competing for labor. Then we want to ask, what is the labor market for represented employees at CICERA? Since 2012, we filed an information request with the employer for all terminations and all new hires within the last 5 years. Since 2012, all of the represented employees hired at CICERA were recruited from counties within the Bay Area. Additionally, no, and we do have a few that are unknown because they left and we weren't able to reach them. Additionally, no local 2,700 bargaining unit employees left CICERA for jobs outside the Bay Area. The labor market for represented employees is the Bay Area, not the state of California. Here you can see our list of employees that were hired in the last 5 years. We have a college student that came from Cal State East Bay, an office temp came from Walnut Creek. We have somebody from Martinez, Richmond, Pleasant Hill, Martinez, Fresno, Concord, Martinez, Walnut Creek, Martinez. So we're not seeing anybody from San Diego or Ventura or San Bernardino or San Diego. When you look at employees who terminated status, the employees that left for better opportunity, we had some people that retired, we had some people that are marked as confidential, their private personnel decisions that have to do with why they left. But the people that left for better opportunities all went to employers in the Bay Area. They went to the San Francisco Employees Retirement System, they went to Contra Costa County, oddly enough. They went to Samsara, and we had one person move to Italy, which is a totally different kettle of fish. So when I first saw the comparators, I went to my colleagues. I work with 20 other union reps that we work all over the state, and we particularly are concentrated heavily in the Bay Area. And I asked them, are any of your employers, because everybody in public sector does class and comp studies, are any of them using Southern California comparators? And the response I got from staff member after staff member is, absolutely not. That's crazy. And so this is a list of all the other employers in the locality that do not use Southern California comps either. This is not a radical notion. The cost of using incorrect comparators. Incorrectly defining the labor market for represented staff puts CICERA at risk for increased employee turnover if the recommendations to freeze or reduce employees' wages below the barrier market were to be implemented. COFF's additional recommendations to gut employee career ladders and dismantle the current wage scale would freeze wages for some current employees for the better part of a decade. It would also reduce annual earnings for some newer employees by as much as $14,000 annually. Since 2012, 20 represented employees have left employment at CICERA. There are currently only 27 employees in the AFSCME bargaining unit. Gail noted in a December 2015 letter to the CICERA board that recommended COFF's adoption of COFF's 2015 non-represented class and comp study. The ability to attract and retain qualified employees is paramount to fulfilling CICERA's fiduciary responsibility. CICERA has had a higher than normal staff turnover rate, peaking at 21% in 2014 and dropping to 10% in 2015. Prior to 2015, the lowest turnover rate was in 2010 at 10%, which is still not optimal. The high levels of turnover not only increase recruitment and training costs, but most importantly leads to a loss of talent and institutional knowledge. It is clear that employees have been leaving CICERA for more economically advantageous positions at other organizations. We looked at the non-rep members of staff who left. There were 10 of them, and none of them left for better opportunities. They all resigned. Retired or left for personal, for confidential reasons. Gail is absolutely correct. A 74% turnover rate of represented employees over the last 5 years is absolutely unacceptable. Sisera, unfortunately, has a toxic internal climate that has fueled employee turnover rates. There's been an attempt to have potlucks and picnics, but those don't address the root causes of poor employee morale at Sisera. Slashing employee wages to levels that are dramatically lower than other Bay Area employers will only make matters worse and will substantially increase Sisera's turnover rate. The COF report recommends eliminating the existing career ladders for the Retirement Counselor 1, 2, and 3 series and replacing it with a Retirement Counselor classification and a Senior Retirement Counselor classification. The top step for COF's proposed Senior Retirement Counselor classification is not only lower than the existing top step for a Retirement Counselor 2, it is over $14,000 a year lower than the current top step of the Retirement Counselor 3 position. The salary range placement recommendations presented in Appendix 4 of the COF study are very misleading. There are parts of the study that we found to be obscure. COF would have you believe that the Senior Retirement Counselor classification is only being Y-rated by 5.2%, when in reality the Y rating for half of the staff already in that position is closer to 18%. Even if Sisera were to grant COLA increases at 3% a year for the next 7 years, these staff would not receive a pay raise until the seventh year, and it would be just over a 1% increase. In other words, they would have to wait 7 years for a $71 raise. The COF study additionally fails to mention their plan proposes eliminating two classifications within the Retirement Accounting Specialist 1, 2, and 3 series. This career ladder would be collapsed into a singular position titled Accounting Specialist. The proposed top step for the new position is almost $4,000 a year less than the current top step for the Accounting Specialist series. AFSCME recommends leaving both of these career ladders in place, both for retirement counselors and for accounting specialists. And this will be a little redundant because it comes up somewhere else. We do think that there are issues regarding lack of differentiation in the job classifications, and Katie noted that. But we also think that it's quite possible to rewrite those existing job classifications in a way so that they are clearly delineated between an entry level, a journey level, and a very experienced level employee. Other Bay Area employers have three-step series for retirement counselors and for accounting specialists. Adopting COF's recommendation to eliminate Sisera's existing career ladders will increase rather than reduce employee turnover rates. Replacing an employee who quits costs on average 21% of that employee's pay. AFSCME does concur, and that goes back to that there is a lack of differentiation in the current job descriptions, and that does need to be addressed. The salary range placements in Appendix 4 of COF's compensation report proposes significant wage cuts. The depth of the proposed cuts is not adequately covered in COF's appendix. The wages of all represented classifications that AFSCME benchmarked are below market. Some classifications are only 1.2% under the external labor market. Other classifications are 17 to 20% below the labor market. There is no justification for slashing the wages of the benchmark classifications or the wages of other AFSCME positions because of internal alignment. If you look at the retirement member services technician, the current top step is $28.78 an hour. COF is proposing a top wage of $25.11. When you look at that annually, that's a decrease in wages of $7,644. The retirement office specialist, the total decrease, and I'm not going to go through, you all obviously can all read, so I won't. The annual decrease in wages for that position is $10,128 a year. The retirement accounting specialist 1, 2, 3 series, the annual decrease in wages for that is $3,852. For the retirement counselor three, it's $14,100. For the retirement counselor one, it's $504. For the retirement accounting technician, it's $324 less a year. For the retirement member services data specialist, it's $3,588 a year. For the administrative assistant, this classification was not benchmarked by COF. AFSCME's comps indicate that this position is 20% below market. COF is recommending through internal alignment, and we'll talk more about this in a minute, that that position be raised $192 a year. But their own, for some reason, and I'm not quite sure why, for some reason they also studied the administrative assistant position. And the data on that was sent to us, I think possibly by accident. Their own study, and this is included in your hard copy of the report, shows that that position is 18%, I believe, below market. And so it doesn't make sense to raise it $192 if they're underpaid by 18 or 20%. The retirement senior member services data specialist position would take a hit of $3,852 a year under COF's proposal. COF's salary range placement recommendations propose paying executive assistant wages that are 20% higher than the existing AFSCME administrative assistant position. At some point, and this goes back to what I just said, it was 18%, COF comped the administrative assistant position, and again, that is in this packet, and it's marked as COF's comp, and determined that that position was 18.2% behind market, yet they only recommended increasing administrative assistant pay by 0.3%, almost 18% less than what your comparators are paying other employees in this classification. AFSCME benchmarked the position and found that it's 20.1% behind market using Bay Area comparators. AFSCME looked at a classification study that COF conducted for the city of Calistoga. In that study, COF recommended that the executive assistant position be paid only 5% more than the administrative position, not 20% more. We calculated the percentage difference between executive assistant pay and administrative assistant pay for the comparators COF used in the Calistoga study and found that none of the comparators had a 20% range between executive assistant and administrative assistant. And again, the link for that is on your report. We found that one comparator pays the executive assistant at the same rate as the administrative assistant in that study. Two paid 2% more for the executive assistant. Two other comparators paid 5% more. One paid 13% more, and two paid 14% more. If you look at the job classifications for those two positions, they are extremely similar, extremely similar. COF's reports have numerous errors, including but not limited to enhanced PERS formulas were not included in COF's benefit detail calculations. This discrepancy is highlighted in yellow in AFSCME's benefit detail spreadsheets. They credited represented employees with $150 deferred compensation benefit because the agency provided information that a deferred compensation benefit of $150 is provided to AFSCME group to AFSCME employees that are hired after 110. And that they were capturing the benefit that would be received at the classic tier by a five-year employee. There is only one member of our bargaining unit who is a classic tier and receives a $150 deferred comp benefit. COF neglected to include annual stipends in the benefit detail calculations. In Alameda County, that's worth at least $1,000. COF used inconsistent methodology in the application of their PERS enhancement calculations, and we have a side-by-side chart. Again, that is included in your report. Jessica Irby, who is our retirement counselor three that spoke earlier, is much more conversant on retirement matters than I am, and so she'll be fielding questions on that. The other discrepancy in their data, and we received yesterday a analysis of the COF study from our international union. I'd asked them to, I'd sent them copies of the study and asked them to look it over. And one of the things that Mark points out, and this has been included as the last page of your packet, that adjustments were made to salaries, but not, and he's talking about the cost of labor. Adjustments were made to salaries, but not benefit costs. If the cost of labor, and I'm at the third bullet point on the back of your packet, if the cost of labor is lower in the adjusted jurisdictions, then the same appropriate documented adjustment factor that is applied to salaries should also be applied to the calculated cost of benefits. Mark also noted, and this is bullet number one, with rare exception, the non-local employers remain clustered near the bottom of the salary distribution for the benchmark classifications, even after the labor cost adjustment is applied. This provides compelling evidence that the labor adjustment factor used is too modest. The alternative explanation, which is that it is a coincidence that non-local employers all lag in compensation compared to Contra Costa County local employers, and we find that argument to be less convincing. On the first page, and I won't go into that, you can read it later, Mark also talks about how the out-of-state, how the Southern California comparators are clustered together and weight cost study in a way that's inappropriate, but I'll let you go to that later. So in our compensation findings, I'm hoping it's a little fuzzy. We were working until 3 a.m. last night to prepare for this, so our scanning we might wish were a little clearer, but it is what it is. So what we did here is, and I wish I had the laser, a side-by-side comparison. If you use, this is AFSCME's comps using Bay Area comparators and how much employees are below market. I'm just going to deal with the percentages and what cost cutting study shows. This first slide is actually pretty close together. The accounting techs are both within the 5% margin of error. COF found that they are 1.3% above market. Our comparators show that they are 1.2% market. Earlier when I had said that we don't think it's reasonable to adjust people no matter where they fall that are within the 5% range, if you look to the right, the yellow highlighted blocks that are here, COF had said that these, the effective dates and the next salary increases and the next percentage increase in the yellow areas was unknown. Actually, these are all posted online and they're easily known, so we filled them in. If you look at, let's see, who is it? Contra Costa Water District, they are getting a 3 to 4.5% raise in July of 2017. So that already changes this number, and that's true for other employers as well. For the retirement member services technician, COF found that this position is 14% above market. If you use Bay Area comparators, which again we think are appropriate, this position is 1.2% below market. For the retirement member services data specialist, COF found that this position is 6% above market. If you use Bay Area comparators, they're 2.9% below. And so essentially what we're saying is they're competitive. These first three positions, they're competitive at market. Nothing needs to be done to them. For the retirement counselor two, COF finds that this position is 5.7% above market. We believe that this position is 5.2% below. And we decided to use median total compensation. I should have explained that earlier. It's the same data that Katie was using, and we think that makes sense as a point of comparison. The benefit detail sheets, which we didn't change a great deal because we didn't want to muddy the water, even though we think that there are discrepancies there, are included in this packet as well as the top monthly salary sheets. But for the purposes of this presentation, I really didn't want to put you guys to sleep, so we're only going to use this one. For the retirement member services data specialist, COF finds that position is 6% above market. Our analysis shows that it's either 5 or 9% below. For the retirement counselor two, COF finds that that's 5.7 above market. We believe it's 5.2% below. For the executive assistant, COF finds that this position is 0.3% above market. We believe that in looking at total compensation that that is 7.7% below. That is a non-rep position, so that's outside of our purview, but that's our analysis. On the retirement administrative assistant, Quaff is saying that they are 18.2% below market, and that's in their own comp sheet, which is included in here. We believe that number is actually 20.1, recommending that they're only adjusted by less than 1%. Makes me stutter. This is Quaff's comp sheet that was given to us in July of 2017, and you can see at the bottom in this area that their own calculations using, we think, the improper comp is that they're 18.2% below. For the retirement counselor three, Quaff did not comp this, because what they did is they comped the retirement counselor two position and brought the TAP salary for that position lower than the existing salary for the two. And so that would make AFSCME's position of three 4.8% below market. For the retirement accounting specialist three, also they didn't comp that. We believe that position is 17.1% below market. Our recommendations. One of the things that has concerned me at Cicero is the employer seems not only intent but enthusiastic about implementing these proposals. Forcibly implementing Quaff's recommendations, we think, will cause lasting and irreparable damage to the agency. As such, we make the following recommendations. We strongly recommend that you use data from our labor market, which is Bay Area competitors. We would recommend that you develop a compensation strategy that matches the market. We don't think we need to lead it. For most of our positions, we think no adjustment is necessary. We would ask that you leave the current career ladders in place. And for some reason, I think it, as part of the late night, I'll find it in here. We would recommend that you also differentiate between entry-level, experience-level, and advanced-level work in the existing job classifications for the series, as is normally done. We would also ask that you direct the employer not to implement Quaff's proposed range place recommendations. There are extensive discrepancies in the data that invalidate the recommendations. On the career ladders, and I thought we had a slide on that, but I think I can find it here. One more time. It's in your packet on page 10. The Harvard Business Review says, one of the drivers of turnover is easy to overlook. Allowing workers to stagnate in their current role, even after controlling for pay, industry, job title, and many other factors, they find that workers who stay longer in the same job without a title change are significantly more likely to leave for another company for the next step in their career. Stagnating in a role for an additional 10 months raises the odds that employees will leave the company for their next role by about 1 percentage point, a statistically significant effect. The likely reason is that workers who don't see a clear progression from their current role to a better position ultimately turn to opportunities elsewhere. The very last thing I would say, part of our responsibility, part of my responsibility, is to be honest with employers, and sometimes those conversations are difficult. The recommendations in the Quaff study, we think, only make sense if the employer has two objectives. One objective would be to literally drive employees out of the organization to go work somewhere else. The other would be if the employer is trying to provoke a labor stoppage. We don't think that either of those objectives is desirable, either for the union or for the employer. We would ask that you please be very thoughtful about this, and please be very thoughtful about giving this employer some clear direction on this. I'm very concerned that where we're going is not a good place for anybody. Questions, and I'm going to ask a couple of members of my team to come up, because particularly if you have questions on retirement, other people are better suited to answer that than
I have a question for you while you're waiting for that, which is, can you tell us why you did not retain a qualified firm to do
a class and comp study?
So that's an interesting question. We had repeatedly asked the employer for more time to prepare this because we didn't have a consultant. We explained that to them. And I got what I thought was a rather snarky response back saying, it's unfortunate that we chose not to hire a consultant. I have previously tried to hire consultants, and what we found was consultants are not willing to work for unions. Their business model relies upon selling these studies to employers. They sell it to almost every non-represented group because you can't do your own internal study and say you deserve a 20 or 30% pay raise and have that be credible. They frequently sell them for the non-rep, for the represented employees as well. Asking them to poke holes in other people's studies would create conflict in their industry, and frankly, they just have no interest in doing it. About 3 years ago when I worked with BART, I called, I think, every major consultant that does studies. Over 90% refused to return my phone call. And the two individuals, the two companies that did, frankly, laughed at me and thought it was rather quaint and comical that we would even think for a minute that they'd work for us. And so
the answer to the question is you couldn't find a qualified consultant?
They don't do that work for unions. It's not that we couldn't find it. There's plenty of qualified consultants out there. They don't work for unions. They work for employers. And they're not going to bite off their own, mess up their own relationships with employers.
Okay. You've answered the question.
Any other questions from trustees? Trustee.
You began your presentation about how in the contract it speaks to employees being involved prior to actually doing the study. Did you ever... any time bring this up to management before the study was continued to point this out and remind them?
On the first day I was here, I actually had a conversation with Christina, and I said, I'm very concerned about the comparators as well as the benchmarks. And I was told very curtly, we're not interested in having that conversation. It was decided in 2015, and she walked down the hall. And I just kind of stood there, frankly, a bit gobsmacked. That's not the way the normal conversation with an employer goes. We've had repeated conversations. Since then, I've raised concerns about this and been told.
Was that the only time you brought it up to staff, or was there any other time you challenged it?
Christina and I have had multiple interactions about this, and it was very clear that there has not been a desire to have a conversation. So normally you would not have to beg the employee. I mean, normally it's a group and it's a team process. Normally this is a collaborative process where everybody sits down together. And I even asked that at one point and was told, well, that's the way, we've never done it that way at Cicera. I don't even know it's what every other employer does, and it's what should be done because it's in both of our best interests to have this work out in a way that makes sense.
How long have you been involved in this?
Since 1983.
No, I meant in terms of representing employees at Cicera.
At Cicera, I think probably, my sense of time at this point is a little fractured, but about 6 months, maybe 8 months. Prior to that, we had a business agent named Susie Griffith, who was the representative here.
So you've been involved here since March? I'm just trying to get a date placement.
My memory, guys. Time flies when you're having fun. I want to say it's about 6 months. It's a relatively short period of time.
Okay, thanks.
Why?
Any other questions from trustees? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any trustee comments? Okay, comments from the public?
I have a question.
Please go to the podium. You'd introduce yourself, we'd appreciate it.
I'm Lori Giacomelli. I was an employee of this office for 27 years. I had to retire because I'm a very vocal person, and I stand up for what I believe and what I think is wrong and right. And if I had stayed, I would have been fired by Gail, I'm sure. What I don't understand, Mr. Gordon,
is that it?
You seem very kind of argumentative. I mean, the boards that we used to have supported the staff. You looked out for them as well as the fund. None of you people seem to really want to do that, especially Gail and Christina. Now, my blood is boiling listening to you, Mr. Gordon, because you're actually almost rude to the lady who was just up here. And I don't understand that. I mean, what gives you the right? You're a board member. You're not the president. I mean, I don't understand. Mr. Watts, right, Rusty? You've made comments before that you can just get anybody off the street to come in here and work. No, you have made comments. It's on record. Staff knows that you've made those kind of comments.
Okay.
So what I don't understand is why are these people, first of all, why are we all having to come back in here again and have this talk? And why do you want to reduce pay for people who have been working here for a long time? I mean, people are looking for other jobs. And I don't know about you guys, but when your pension gets messed up because you have people off the streets, you're not going to be happy. And I just don't understand the argumentativeness, the arrogance, and how, I'm not really quite sure how Gail and Christine are still here, if you want the truth. I do not understand it. I mean, do you guys, like, you've been told it's a toxic environment to work in this place, and nobody seems to care. Not one of you board members cares about that. Have you thought about asking staff? I mean, you have good employees here. And when I left, my last words were, I hope Gail can turn this office around. As a year ago. And I retired early because I couldn't work for her. I couldn't work for somebody who didn't know what was going on in this office, who didn't seem to care, who wasn't here. But to sit there and listen to you be argumentative with her is totally disrespectful on your part. So I'm sure my 5 minutes are up. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Gary Wayne, and I've been here for 28 years. And I just, let you know that I'm a very passionate person when I speak. So if I get my tone gets a little high, just bear with me, all right? I put a lot of years into CCERA retirement since 1989, July 1st of 1989. The place that we had here was a really nice place to work. You know, we had a lot of fun. We had our differences, but, it was a very nice place to work. Dedicated myself to this organization, and I love my job. And I just, it's just not the case now. It feels like you can't really say what you want to say. There's no way of getting back to you guys about what's going on. It's almost like there needs to be some kind of way where the employees can say something to you to let you know what's going on in the organization. If we say something, there's retribution or intimidation, which makes our job stressful. Like I said, I love this job. I put my lifetime into it. There's ups and downs, I understand that. But the idea of cutting the salaries, I'm like in shock of how they can even come up with this plan to do this. And I'm asking myself, why? Why you want to cut our salaries when we had steps where we had 1, 2, and 3, and now you want to just eliminate that step? Well, there was a reason for the step, because of the hard work that we did. And I just can't understand why somebody would want to cut their salary that will create problems for their families and everything. So I, on that level there, it's just, I'm in shock. I cannot believe that the administration wants to have a cutback on our salary. In regard to Kauf study, this report is so screwed, inaccurate, incomplete, and biased toward the employees. Just to give you a summary of what I think about this Kauf report, COF is just doing what the administration wants them to do, and that is to cut costs. That's why they get paid. It's not anything else. All they try and do is cut costs and to get paid. That's the reason why they sound like they sound. And when they did it on job description, we thought that maybe the rest of employees would get a raise or something like that. Well, we didn't get anything. What ended up happening is management ends up getting this huge raise, and we got nothing. So we say, wow, okay. Then they start doing it on the job description, or reclassification, excuse me. Then all of a sudden they want to take money from us so they can give it to management. That's basically what happened. It's almost like take from Paul, or take from Peter to give to Paul, or Robin Hood in reverse, where they steal from the poor and give to the rich. It just don't make any sense. The cost study. I don't know. I can't understand why they would even want to do it. It just doesn't make any sense. And in regard to other districts like sanitation, the sanitation district gets paid very well for what they do, but yet they're in our system where we have to take care of them as far as retirement and stuff. We work hard. We work hard for our money. We work hard to take care of the members and the employees. And I just, you know, like I said, they belong to our system where we take care of them. Bottom line is, setting a mean-spirited and bad precedent where workers will be leaving or having to work a second job, thus you'll be losing all this experience and knowledge. New workers, even if they come in here, would be afraid to stay long-term because of the possibility of future pay cuts. And like I said, the environment here is toxic. It didn't get any better when Marilyn left. It's gotten worse. People are afraid, and they don't know who to turn to. They can't even talk to the board members. They have no outlet. If it wasn't for our union rep talking, we would have no outlet to you guys. They just do what they want to do. Some people are cold-hearted, just don't even have a heart when you talk to them. I would say this. CCER workers are very concerned, very worried, very confused, and feel betrayed. And I just want to just leave you guys with this thought. You know, as a body, if the heart is disease, the organs are disease. The heart you can't even see, but it's there. That's what keeps the organization going. But if it's disease, the whole organization is disease. And that's what we're experiencing right now. We are not just a number or a statistic, no name or faceless object. We are human beings that deserve to be treated right. Employees that work at CCREA enjoy their jobs, but want to be treated with dignity and respect. Please, if you just take a minute, please just look at your staff faces and see the stress, the pain, the anxiety, the confusion, the betrayal in each one of these faces. If you just look at them, that's the way they feel. That's the way I feel. I have nothing to lose. I'm on my way out. But I'll just say this. Your vote to reduce our salary will have a tremendous effect on our lives, our families, and our morale around here. I just want to say, may God bless you with the heart of understanding and the willingness to do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any other public comments?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am Nanette Mendoza, former Cicera employee, retired in March of 2016. I have spoken before you all on several occasions. I would like to point out several things. I have very grave concern about what is happening here on a number of levels. First of all, we are the Contra Costa County Employees Retirement Association. It is your sole fiduciary responsibility to work toward the best interest of the retirees and the future retirees, bar anything else. What has transpired here, I am going to tell you, I also retired 6 months to a year before I had planned. I can stay in an organization only as long as I can align with my own personal convictions. When it comes to a point that there is an expectation of deviance from that, I choose to not be a part of it. Regardless of the outcome, I will always stay true to that. I think that there have been many things that have happened here. They have presented several times. We have given you much documentation. I don't know if the board is, it has been a transition in the board. I came in 1988, the first time. I felt so very blessed, and this has been my all-time favorite position in my entire career. And I have loved this place so much. It took me a 3-year period of time of vacillating back and forth because of that love for this organization, and it got to the point where it was, I can no longer stay. Possibly I can do something from outside this organization. There have been several things that have been stated here. When Koff, in her presentation, spoke about the classifications and the titles, those being brought forward from county positions, they actually were not. They were very Cicera-specific classifications. The structure was very well defined. The career ladder was very well defined. What has happened in the last several years is someone has gone through and removed portions of those classification requirements. We have been given in the career ladder, we do start out at the level one position. I'm an accounting specialist three, was formerly. And at that level, you had a certain amount of duties. You had the duties that you performed. You had a certain level of education. And might I say also that there have not been any positions in the represented classifications that have ever required any degree. Let me make that clear. Secondly, the accounting specialist series. The work performed by the accounting specialist threes, which were Gary Wayne, myself, we have another party. We have been doing accountant level work for over 20 years. Over 20 years. So if I go back to Koff saying there is not that much clarification, in the career ladder and the pathing, we had educational certifications that we needed to accomplish, increase in responsibility. We were sent to all of the education, I might say, that you, the board, are currently sent to. Through the outside presenters, we were sent through the CAP 1, 1, and 2. We were sent to all of these. The philosophy being, at the time this was created, and it's a philosophy that I find to be the ultimate in a management style, the more educated your staff is, whether they are performing that job or not, the much more educated your department is, the much better service they can perform for the retirees, which are, once again, your sole objective. We have had this management, this classification study done, and when that came back in, we were not released. Anyone else, we were only had access to view our own specific writing that we did. I actually have a collection of all of it, because I went around and everyone gave me theirs. It was so that people could not see what other people had written, the responses. We also worked independently with minimal supervision as needed or requested. What has happened in the COF study, it has taken out all of the independence part, it's taken out all of the education part, it has basically, and it has made it appear to be supervision dependent. This is not the case. Things went very smoothly. Everyone knew their job, everyone understood how everything worked. The last year I was here, I probably spent one-third to one-half of my working day in meetings. In meetings. Because we had transition in management. We had new people. We had temporary management come in for a year and a half, not knowing what they're doing, not being familiar with pension systems, not being familiar with our operating systems. And it was all basically big discussions. And it became so entirely frustrating, reconstructing of a system and an agency that ran so smoothly. We had a board that considered everyone equal as a human being, as a person. No one, not one person, was ever disrespected in any way, and you were very much a part of this organization. That doesn't exist now. And I am so very sad for everyone. And when this starts impacting, which, as I understand, it already has been impacting some of the retirees, I find that very shameful. I think the priorities need to be readjusted. I don't know if the board actually is not aware, really aware, because we have had to sign an agreement saying we would not be permitted to speak with any board member during any times of negotiations. Well, I am of old school philosophy. The more people are mentored and valued, they will stay even during extreme conditions because of their devotion and their love for their organization. When you come to have a higher, and I'm also of a very strong opinion, that I think the worst possible management style that exists is a hierarchical and dictatorial management style. And I think, though there may be short-term wins for the upper corporate structure, and that's what this is now feeling like, a corporate structure, in the end, everyone is going to lose. And most importantly, it is going to be your retirees and future retirees and the very reason that you are all even here. So I hope that you take this seriously. I really hope that you do. I wish I could have taken most of the people with me when I left for the impact that this has had on them. Anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Case.